Welcome to Breakthrough Business Strategies, and happy Monday to each and every one of you. This is your host, Michelle Price, and on Twitter, at Prosperity Gal, coming to you from the third coast of Houston, Texas today, where we will bring you information on business success, mindset, your inner game, and Web 2.0 tools, techniques, and strategies, your outer game, so that you're equipped to create success in your business today. You know, our guest today is Don Cooper, and he has so graciously agreed to return to Breakthrough Business Strategies Radio. We had him on earlier this year, and we discussed the Tao of Selling, and you guys asked me if we could bring him back, and so we did. And this week, we're going to be discussing the myth of price and how it trips us up, and for some of us, even cripples our business. One of the things that I love about every time we have an opportunity to talk with Don is that, you know, one of the, I love the fact that he's come up with, and you know, let's just ask him that. I want to know how he came up with that. Don, how are you? Instead of doing an intro, I'm just going to ask you questions.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. You are called the sales heretic, and I absolutely love that. I got that the minute I read it. But what's
Great.
The story behind that? Where did that come from?
Well, I had been searching for a good brand for myself. And in the field of sales training, there are so many people competing that so many good ideas have already been taken. You can take almost any word, put it in front of the word selling, and it's been done. And I had been talking with somebody at a networking event, and he had mentioned he had been to some sales training, and he hated it. It was all this really old stuff. It was high pressure, high manipulation. It made him uncomfortable. He didn't want to do it. And in talking to him, I mentioned that I don't teach that kind of thing, and I'm disgusted that that stuff still is out there and being taught. And the next day, I was literally in the shower and running through my head, and I realized that I'm a heretic. A lot of what I teach audiences really flies in the face of conventional sales wisdom. So that thought hit me, and boom, that was my brand.
See, one of those serendipitous moments where it instantaneously comes about. I love hearing stories like that.
But that came through networking, and that's the irony, is this came through a random encounter with somebody I had never met before. It was just a conversation that came out of the blue. And, you know, you made the point earlier on that, you know, networking is about getting to know people. It's not about pitching your features and benefits. And, you know, if I had spent the time just trying to tell this guy what I did and that's it, I wouldn't have had this epiphany.
That's an absolutely fantastic point to make. You know, I really wish more people would get that. It's funny how when we're out in public, we seem to think that, oh, gosh, see, I have to get it all in. And, you know, especially when you get into those groups where everyone gets up and gives a 30 or 60-second commercial.
Right.
I just giggle inside when they try to fit every possible thing in, and you don't understand a darn thing they're saying, and you didn't understand what their name was, and you don't know what their company name is, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm so exhausted by the time they're done.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because one of the things we have a group here, it's a local group, and it's actually growing to other cities in Texas. It's called My Referral Network. And, you know, Mitchell Fromm, who's one of the co-founders, he comes on once a month and gives a networking nugget. And I love what he came up with from this because it's kind of like, you know, that transpired for you. What
uh-huh.
transpired for him was he had gone to B&I. He didn't care for it. It was just a
right.
little too rigid. It was like they were going through the – it reminds me of a bad relationship. I mean, I'm sorry for people who have a great B&I chapter, great, but I've visited like four or five of them. It's like they go through the motions, but the heart's not there. And if someone comes to a group like that and they don't have those skills, they're not going to know what to do. Therefore, they're not going to be bringing any value, and they're not going to get much out of it. And so instead, our group is based more on personal development and helping people understand how to give a warm referral.
Right.
And, you know, it's not about just passing leads. And I'd so love for people to start really getting that's just as important in sales. It's
absolutely
not about. Yeah. Tell us, do you have a situation or a story that you can share with us where either you or someone else took that heretical, is that a word?
Heretical, absolutely.
Perspective on sales or a situation at a networking event so that they actually got a favorable result instead of doing the whole traditional, oh, yeah, you know, we do this and our best customers are that, and I'm standing there going, oh, geez, Liz, when's this guy going to shut up?
Well, one of the things I teach people is that you can network anywhere, anytime, and if you're open to the idea, and that's really the key is being open. And one of my favorite stories is one about a friend of mine who runs a consulting company, and he works with businesses that want to do work with a particular sector of the federal government. And he picked up one of his best and biggest clients because of a guy he met at a yard sale. They just had a conversation
wow.
over some of the stuff that was there, and that led to talking about what they did, and he gave him a card, and one thing led to another. And it was not a leads group. It was not a Chamber of Commerce event. It was simply two guys talking, you know, at a yard sale. There was no pressure. There was no real promotion. There was no hard sell. And that's really, you know, what a lot of sales is. We make it too difficult.
It is funny. People do tend to make things complicated. Yeah.
And a lot of people
really do.
Yeah, and a lot of people are scared. They're scared of failing. They're scared of not making their nut. And so they push too hard. And ironically, the harder you push, the worse your results tend to be.
Mm. And you know what that reminds me of? Now, I know you don't, but some of us out there have raised kids. And when they get to be teenagers, and we can all think back to when we were a teenager, remember that morning you woke up late and you had to hurry up and get ready and get out so you didn't miss the bus? And it's like you're racing around when all you had to do is just prepare a little better, have everything all laid out so your mornings weren't so rash and dash. And invariably, the days that you rashed and dashed, those were the days you left a report behind that you needed to turn in, and therefore
mm-hmm.
you didn't get a good grade.
What you're describing is actually how too many salespeople and too many professionals run their lives. They don't do enough preparation. They're always in a crisis management mode. They're running around at the last minute forgetting stuff because they didn't plan effectively a little bit before that.
Would you say, Don, that when people don't plan effectively, because I have one of the things that I do find it tad frustrating in listening to folks because I ask lots of questions. Imagine that, me asking lots of questions.
Go figure.
And they always use this excuse, oh, I just don't have time. And who was that that said, if you don't have time to do it right the first time, when are you going to have time to do it over?
Precisely. You've got a certain
when
amount of time. The question is, how do you use it best?
Yeah, when people get into that mindset, doesn't that also make them be in a place where they're going to be more sensitive and less prepared when people bring up the subject of price? Because that's
yes.
the thing that I think is, that's today's focus. And so let's talk about that.
All righty. And you're right. That is a big problem with that, because if people are not prepared to have a price conversation, then when it comes up, they don't know what to do, and they typically do the worst possible thing.
You know, one of the things that I notice when I watch people have these conversations is it's almost like they're trying to figure out if the person's going to give them a yes or a no, and instead of asking better questions to uncover their needs, they start operating out of that whole fear mindset. And they immediately start, well, we can do this, and we can do this, and we can do this. I'm like, you didn't ask if they wanted that. What would you suggest? What are some of the things when you go out and you do your training and you're speaking, what are some of the things that you help the audience or help the people who are there for the training
stop and kind of clear the decks when it comes to questioning the myth of price, because everyone wants to just zone straight into that.
Well, one of the things you just said is critically important, and that is that so many salespeople operate out of fear. And that goes for salespeople, it goes for professionals, it goes for business owners, anybody who's involved in selling at any part. We tend to operate out of a fear mentality. And I'm not sure if it's 90% or if it's 72%, but certainly many, if not most, people operate out of fear. And there's the fear of losing the sale, there's the fear of rejection. And especially in an economy like this, when you want every sale you can get, every time you've got a prospect, you start panicking. Well, my God, what if I don't make this? I need this. So when you're operating out of a fear mentality, though, you cannot negotiate effectively. You need to negotiate from a position of strength. You need to be confident. So that's the first step, is you need to be confident in yourself, in your company, in your product, in your service. You need to have an idea of what that is really and truly worth in the marketplace in general, and to any given prospect in particular. One of the things that not enough salespeople do is to learn what really matters to the prospect. What are not just wants and needs, because we're taught, you know, find out what their wants and needs are, but those are real superficial. What else? Get beyond that. What are the real true costs to the prospect if they don't do what they need to do? Or if they buy the wrong product or choose the wrong vendor? What are the worst case scenarios? What are the upsides when they use your product or service? What's their return going to be? Are they going to get 100% return? Are they going to get 1,000% return? The difference in how much they're going to make because of what they're buying from you makes a difference in how much they're willing to spend. What are their fears? What are their costs of doing business? What are their costs of waiting? What are their biases? What are their previous experiences? What are the things that they want more of and want less of? What are the things that they value? What are their priorities? Because their values and their priorities might not be the same as yours. So you never know when somebody will have price as their number one priority versus their last priority. You've got to find these things out. The better you know your prospect, the easier it is to position your product or service effectively as a good buy, whatever the price is, and the easier it is to maintain your price without discounting it.
Now, you're bringing great questions up. What I notice is, and maybe this has just happened to me, what I notice is when I ask people questions, they don't always give me honest answers. So when you say go deeper, what do you suggest to help us know whether or not they're giving us good answers?
Well, you have to ask the right questions in the right order. You ask me what I do when I train salespeople. When I work for a company and I train their sales team, one of the things that I do is I will give them a list of questions. And typically that list is customized for that industry or even that company. And there may be anywhere from 20 to 40 different questions for them to ask their prospects. And they're in a specific order, because the order of the questions you ask makes a difference. So you start out with broad questions, general questions, questions that are not particularly personal. And the goal of those questions is simply to get the prospect talking. Because the more they talk, the more comfortable they're going to get. Then there are follow-up questions. There are questions to dive a little bit deeper. But the initial questions are less personal. The questions get more personal as you go, as you're developing rapport and trust with that prospect, which is why when I instruct salespeople to ask about budget issues, that question comes near the end of the process, not near the beginning of it, because budget is an extremely personal issue, correct?
It is. Yet, have you ever noticed, maybe it's just me, it's one of the first questions a prospect will ask me, well, how much is it going to cost?
Yes. Yes. And here's the reason why that is. It took me forever to figure this out, because survey after survey after survey consistently shows that price is typically one of the least important factors in people's buying decisions. When people decide what to buy and where to buy it, price is usually close to last on the list. So that data didn't jibe with the fact, the reality, that people almost always ask what the price is right up front. I couldn't figure out why that was. Here's the reason. When a person is comparing disparate products and services, price is the only objective measurement we have. Everything else, quality, service, features, reliability, all that is subjective. Price is the one measuring stick that applies equitably to everything. So if you're looking at cars, you can see a car is $20,000, $30,000. Well, you get the idea that a $30,000 car is probably better in most ways than a $20,000 car. So it gives you a starting point. The problem for too many salespeople is they let that be the ending point as well, because the price doesn't tell the whole story. It gives us some critical information to start with, but it's up to the salesperson to take that further. Because if all we're doing is looking at price, we don't often know what else is an important factor to consider. And this is where so many salespeople get into trouble. Because when all you're doing is looking at price and you don't know anything else, if all the products you're looking at seem the same, except for price, which one are you likely to buy?
The one with the lowest price is how much.
Yeah, the cheapest one. If we don't perceive a difference between products, we'll choose whichever one's cheapest. Similarly, if we don't perceive any difference between retailers, we'll buy whatever we want from whoever is cheapest. So if there's no perceived difference, there's no reason to pay more. Why should I pay 50% more to get the exact same thing? I'll buy this instead and save money. The reality is, and you know this, nothing is equal. When you compare any two products, any two services, you look at any two service providers, there are always differences. So there's always reasons to pay more for one thing versus another. Too often, though, the prospect doesn't know what those things are. I like to tell a story in some of my seminars. Shortly after I moved to Denver, I realized – I go to the airport a lot. I travel. I do speaking and training all over North America, so I'm going to the airport a lot. It occurred to me that it might be cheaper to take a car service to the airport rather than parking for long trips. So I grabbed the phone book, start looking at limo companies, and I start calling limo companies, start with A, go all the way down. Every single company I called, I asked the same question. What's it cost to go to the airport? And all anybody ever did was give me a price. That's it. So when I called all these limo companies and gotten their prices, who did I choose?
I guess the one that's cheapest, but I would have asked other questions.
Well, here's the problem. When it comes to limousines, I'm an idiot. I don't know what questions to ask. I have no idea what makes one limo company better than some other limo company. I am a complete ignoramus when it comes to limousines. Granted, there are some people that would say I don't need the qualifier in that sentence. However, as may be, I don't know. That's not my area of expertise. I don't know anything about limousines. I don't know what to ask. So if we as salespeople are depending on our prospects to ask the right questions, we have already lost the sale. And in fact, we have no business being in sales. It is not the prospect's job to learn about our business. It is our job as salespeople, as professionals, as business owners, to learn about our prospects.
So what would have been some good questions they could have asked you besides just quoting you the price?
Well, one thing they could have asked is, how often do you go to the airport? Another question they could ask is, are you traveling by yourself or with somebody else? Have you ever used limousine service before? What's important to you in a limousine service? These are all questions that would have made me think, would have created a conversation.
And
so
someone who's offering the better service would have really stood out then, too.
Precisely, because I don't know what better service is. All I know is that a car comes, I get in, I go to the airport. That's all I know. That's all I know. If there's more to the story than that, they need to tell me. I need to be educated about limousines. And it's their job to do that. But nobody did. If somebody had said, Mr. Cooper, what's important to you in a limousine company? I would have said, I don't know. Which would have then given them the opportunity to say, well, is it important to you that your driver be professional? I would have said, yeah, absolutely. They could have said, is it important to you to have a fresh, cold bottle of water in the limousine waiting for you when you get in? I would have said, yes, that's very important. Sure, absolutely. They could have said, is it important to you to have today's newspaper sitting there waiting for you? Is it important to you to have the most recent business magazines waiting for you to read while you're in the car? There's all kinds of things they could have asked me. And notice that what I'm encouraging people to do is to ask what's important rather than to say, well, we have this and that and the other. Because when we simply give people a litany of what we offer, it's like a brochure. And it may or may not be important. But if we're phrasing everything in the form of a question, like this sort of a Jeopardy technique, is this important to you? Is that important to you? Are these things important to you? It creates a dialogue with the customer, and now you've got the customer saying, well, yes, this is important. Yes, that's important. So rather than saying, we have this, and we have this, and we have this, the customer is now agreeing, yeah, that's important, and yes, I would like that, and yes, that would be nice too. So this is becoming a conversation and not merely a recitation. And then once they're through with the question,
I see an opportunity there for them to also uncover if they're doing that consistently and keeping track of the responses. They may be doing things that aren't important to the majority of their customers, but they could also throw a question in there, something they've been thinking about offering and haven't yet. And if a lot of people say yes to that, now they know their customer wants it.
Sure, absolutely. This is called market research. Ask your customers what they want they're not currently getting. Ask them if they value what you're currently giving them. Because you're absolutely right, Michelle. You might be offering your customers a service that they don't care about. It's not of any value to them, in which case you should stop doing it because it's costing you money. Or you might uncover something that they don't know about yet but would like. That gives you then a competitive advantage.
And I like how you shared with us, ask them, is it important to you? I like that. I'm adding that to my list of questions. I'm typing it now. Is it important to you?
Is blank important to you? It's a very simple, very flexible question, and you can stick all kinds of things in there. So for people in your audience, the people who are listening now, whatever it is you do, whatever it is you sell, think about what might be important to your prospects. Ask your current customers. If you don't know, ask your current customers, what's the reason you use us? What do you like most about us? And write those things down and create questions around those things. How important is timeliness to you? Is reliability important to you? Is having your product made in America important to you? So whatever your feature is, put that in the form of a question and see how important that is to your prospects. And use that as the foundation of a dialogue.
Yeah, because I'm hearing secondary questions from the ones that you're listing.
Yep.
So when people say, because I can hear the smart asses in the audience now, is reliability important to you? Well, of course it is. Define to me what is reliability to you? Is reliability you need it in 24 hours, or is it you'll be happy if it's here in a week?
Yep. Yeah, what happens if your product is not reliable? How do you define reliability? What's the reliability of your current vendor? Is that sufficient or do you need it to be better? Yeah, one question leads to other questions. And the thing is, you're talking about stuff that's important to the prospect, not necessarily what's important to you. Those are very different things. What's important to us, the salesperson, is, you know, can we get the deal? What's important to the prospect, though, are the issues that are really relevant to them. When you're asking about reliability, how reliable is reliable enough for you? 100% is not possible, doesn't exist. Is 99.9 sufficient? Or do you need 99.99? What's the cost of something that's not reliable enough? What happens when something goes down, when there's a failure?
Now, those last two questions you asked, I heard those as being things that would help you later on in the conversation when you do start talking about price.
Absolutely. You are tracking with me exactly, Michelle. Because if the cost to them of the system going down is $1 million a day, well, it may very well be worth paying extra $10,000 for that kind of reliability. That's cheap insurance. Ask BP how important insurance is, how important reliability is.
Mm.
What are the costs of failure? What are the costs of choosing the wrong vendor? What are the costs of not investing where you need to invest effectively?
So when you use those better questions, then what you're doing is you're showing them that you really care.
That's part of it, yep.
Probably a whole lot more than the other salesperson did.
Oh, yeah.
But you're also showing that you want to understand if and how you can help them in the best place they need help. You know, it reminded me last night, I just come up with all these analogies, I can't help it. I was listening, as I was participating in the blog chat last night, and the topic was sidebars and what do you put in them, and do you really use them? Do they distract people? And everyone kept saying, well, I like this, and I don't like that, or I like this, and I don't do that. And I kept tweeting, what does your audience want? Who cares whether you like it or not?
Uh-huh.
It's like they were forgetting who they were serving.
Precisely. And it's one of the things I try to get across to salespeople all the time. You are not your prospect. What you like and don't like is irrelevant. Just because you like plaid doesn't mean everybody likes plaid. Just because you hate plaid doesn't mean that everybody hates plaid. We get into a real trap when we start to believe we are the same as our prospect. And that's one of the things that creates a lot of price problems, because too many salespeople don't actually believe in the value of what they're selling. In many cases, because they personally wouldn't pay that much for a product or service. And this is especially true.
You've really hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
And this is especially true of professionals. People like accountants, personal trainers, professional organizers, hairstylists. They have a skill. They have an amazing skill. Because their skill, their talent comes to them so easily, they don't place a lot of value on it. They would never pay, you know, what I tell them to charge for their services. And I tell them, of course you wouldn't pay that. You can do that. You don't need someone else to do that for you. But others of us out here in the world don't have your gifts. You give me a pair of scissors, I would butcher somebody's hair. I cannot style hair to save my life. I am lousy at organizing. I am lost without my personal organizer. There are a lot of things that I can't do. I will never be able to do, no matter how much I study and practice and train. So I will happily pay large amounts for somebody who is very, very skilled in those areas. So just because you wouldn't pay that much for what you do, or for any particular product in your line, does not mean that somebody else wouldn't pay that.
That gives us a whole new perspective on how we look at that. I like that. The other thing that I see happens quite a bit when it comes to sales in companies, whether you're a sales professional or whether it's your own business, some of the things that I see surface during conversations like this also has to do with what their mindset is around prosperity and what they learned growing up about money.
Absolutely.
And they tend to, yeah, they tend to put that on everyone else around them. And I'm like, you've got to understand, they grew up in a different family. They heard a different message than you did.
Too many people believe that prophet is a dirty word. They don't believe that they are actually entitled to make money. They think that profit margins are bad and that making money is unsavory at best and downright satanic at worst. And often these are not conscious beliefs. They're very often subconscious beliefs. But they affect our actions, just as you said. If they don't have the right prosperity consciousness, the right mindset about money, then they're going to have a hard time selling at decent prices. One of the exercises that I lead audiences through when I'm talking about pricing stuff, I'll ask them, let's say your business made an extra $100,000 in profit this year. What could you do with that money? And I'll let them all brainstorm, come up with ideas, and then we'll do call-outs from the audience. And the things that come back out of the audience are things like, well, we could do more training. We could do more marketing. We could hire more people. We could give raises and bonuses. We could improve people's retirement plans. We could do customer appreciation events. We could improve the showroom. We could give more to charity. All of these things are good for the community at large. It means more spending on goods and services. It means higher wages for people. It means more jobs. It means more support for charities. These are all positive things, and they all depend on making enough profit. I mean, you may know this, Michelle. The single period in American history that saw the greatest increase in charitable giving overall over a multi-month period was the early 1980s, the years immediately following the Reagan tax cuts that chopped personal taxes from 90% down to like 20-30%. All of a sudden, people had more money. When they have more money, they give more of it away.
It's definitely given us a lot to kind of chew on, to consider. And it's funny because we're in the times we're in, and it's just, you know, it's the white elephant in the room. Some people don't want to talk about it at all, and other people talk about it so incessantly that they put themselves in a downward spiral.
Right.
My question is, we know we're going through challenging times, and my perspective is it's to help us transcend or get to another place. So
right.
Having that vision helps me with all the changes I need to make, because I find I ask myself better questions. How could I do this, you know, more efficiently, or who could I work with on this that it will benefit them and me? When we are in this kind of economy or you know, situation, a lot of people just think that the answer is to reduce their prices.
Right.
And I think that actually makes it worse. But
I agree.
You're the expert here. Tell us, what does it do and what would be a better way to handle it than just to reduce prices when you're scared because no one's handing you a check and you're not closing a sale?
When you just drop your price for no good reason, what you're saying is that your product or your service was never worth what you were charging in the first place. So there are other things that you can do.
Can you charge too much?
You can. You need to know your audience. Who is your market? And what kind of value is your product or service delivering to that market? And that's part of why I encourage people to look at their market very carefully, know who their audience is, and not try to compete at that bottom level. The poorest segment of the market is not a good place to be because it's really hard to make money there. Can it be done? Yeah. A lot of companies can get by on that. But is that where you want to be? Does that make sense for you to be there? So you need to know who your audience is, and you need to know what kind of value do you provide to that audience. And when that audience shrinks, how can you tap more of that audience? Or how can you convince your remaining audience to spend more money with you? Are there things you can offer your existing customers that you hadn't offered before that will increase the size of their transactions with you?
Now, when some people do that, Don, it just comes across as they're just trying to up the sale without really offering value. Can you give us an example so people can wrap their brains around where people are possibly leaving money on the table and that would work and not come across as, well, we have this and we have this and we have this and you need that?
Right. Rather than tell people what they need, ask them, would this be helpful for you? Would it be more convenient if this were available? How would this impact your business? When you ask questions and get your prospect to tell you what would be of value to them, then when you offer it to them, you're not just pitching them, you're offering them a solution to their needs. Here's an example. A friend of mine in Washington, D.C. is a hairstylist. She specializes in hair extensions, and she secured a contract with a major league sports team to handle the extensions of their whole cheerleading squad. After that was settled, she was talking with the people involved some more, and out of that conversation, she learned that it would actually be more convenient for the team if the cheerleaders could get all of their hair services taken care of all the same salon, so not just extensions, but it would also be good if they could get their colors and cuts and everything else done all together. It would save them time. It would be more convenient. It would just be one billing. So it would make things a lot easier for the team. Well, once she found that out, it was no trouble to upsell them to all the services that her salon could provide. But that wasn't saying, you know, you should come to us for this and this and this as well. Instead, she asked them, what else would help you? What would be convenient for you? And when they said this would be good, she said, well, we're happy to do that for you if you like. Boom. Radically, radically increase the size of the sale. And anybody can do that, whatever your business is. Remember that your customers don't necessarily know all the things you could do for them. When you do not find out what your customers really need, and you do not make them aware of the different ways you could help them, you are doing your customers a disservice. You are cheating your customers by withholding from them products and services that would make their lives or their businesses better.
I see a funny cartoon in my head where on one side of the wall, there's a woman going, I wish I could find someone, and she lists all this stuff. And on the other side of the wall is a business owner going, man, if I could just find customers who wanted this, 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 and this.
Yep. And the two sides aren't talking. There is a wall. I love that metaphor. It's a beautiful now. I can see the picture in my head. There's a wall between them, and it's a literal as well as a metaphorical wall. And it's up to us as the salespeople, as the business owners, professionals, it's up to us to breach that wall. We cannot depend on them to do it. We have to do it. They don't know what we offer. They don't know what to ask. We need to do that. That's our job. That's what we get paid to do. If we're not doing that, we're not doing our job. We're cheating ourselves, we're cheating our companies.
This isn't part of our list of questions, but my mind's going here, and since this is my radio show, I wear the crown. I know, because sometimes when people do this, I go, oh, that was so planned. But I'm telling you, my mind just went here. So I'm sitting here thinking about this from the perspective, and this might not be your audience, but I'm learning from you to ask questions. If there are small businesses, you know, the 2 to 10 person business that wants to improve their sales, I can tell you they probably think being able to bring someone in to do sales training is so out of their reach. Do you only go to major big corporations and teach this kind of stuff?
No, I also work with smaller businesses as well. Now, I will be the first to say that I'm not cheap. There is cheap sales training out there, and some of it's pretty decent. However, there are also less expensive alternatives. If a live training session is too much for your company, think about a webinar. webinar can be delivered for a lot less money because the costs to me or whoever the presenter is are a lot lower. Those savings can be passed on to the buyer. There are books. There are video programs. There are audio programs. What I tell all salespeople, all business owners, all professionals, is that you need to constantly be training yourself. And what I tell every CEO is you need to be constantly training your team. And there are plenty of cost-effective ways to do it. If you have $100, there are ways you can train your team with $100. You buy a copy of a sales book for each person. You get one video set, and you play that. You play the DVDs at your sales meetings every Monday. There are options, but training is absolutely critical. And too many small businesses do not invest money in training. And it is an investment. It has been proven again and again and again that companies that invest more in training see better results. I've had people from my sessions, they come to one of my seminars, or they're at an event where I'm speaking, and I get letters from them afterwards saying that their sales have gone up, their closing rate has improved. They made a sale that day because of what they learned. So the question to small business owners who have a team is, how much are you losing every single day because your team is not as well trained as somebody else's team? The sale does not always go. What's that?
Or even yourself.
Even yourself, absolutely. The sale does not always go to the best product or service. Doesn't even go to the cheapest product or service. The sale typically goes to the best salesperson. So the question is that you? Is that your salesperson?
So we're uncovering that we have a lot of opportunity to learn how to be better salespeople. When we're in the situation and we're still learning, so we haven't mastered it, and we're reading more, we're looking at, you know, can we go take a workshop? Is Don ever going to be in Houston? Okay, this sounds like something I need to find a sponsor for and bring you to Houston.
Let's talk.
There goes
absolutely
my mind. Because I see the benefit in it for me, so I'm being really selfish, and I'm happy to raise my hand and admit it out loud.
Score.
So when you are in the process of growing your skills as sales or as a better salesperson, and like I said, you haven't mastered it, so you don't have the same set of armor that we don't have the same set of armor that you do. How do we handle it when someone comes at us in areas that we aren't real strong on? Like, say we've gotten better at asking questions and we think we've uncovered, you know, what their pain is, and we think we've uncovered better where things are sensitive to them as far as how it could cost them money. And so we get to the point where we're talking about price. Everyone that I know, even if they have the money to spend on them, every penny you ask for, always ask for a discount.
Oh, yeah.
How do you handle that?
The short answer is it depends, because there are a number of different factors that may be surrounding the situation. But in general, my advice to people is to not give a discount unless there's a really good reason to. What I try to communicate to salespeople when I do seminars, when I do training, when I'm speaking, is here's the reason people ask for discounts. The worst case scenario is they don't get one. The best case scenario is they get one. So let's see. We have no downside and unlimited upside to asking. Why not ask? Of course we ask. There's nothing to lose, everything to gain. I ask for discounts all over the place. And I frequently get them. Electronic stores, appliance stores, toy stores, liquor stores. Everywhere. I ask for discounts and I get them. I've taught other people. I've taught all kinds of friends to ask for discounts. And it's amazing how often you can get a discount just by asking for it. Because, Michelle, what is the salesperson afraid of?
Losing the sale.
Exactly. It's back to that fear we talked about at the very beginning of the session. They're afraid of losing the sale. And so they're afraid that if they don't give us the discount, they're losing the sale. And they will rationalize to themselves, well, a small commission is better than no commission. And they'll say, sure. Happens all the time. What the salesperson doesn't know, however, when I ask for a discount, my decision whether or not to buy it is not necessarily based on their answer to that request. If they say no, odds are I'm going to buy it anyway. That's why I'm there. They don't know that, though.
So you're playing on the natural fear people have, and yet you're telling us as salespeople not to buy into that fear.
Precisely. That's exactly it. What's happening is that I know, as the buyer, I know what's going on in the salesperson's head better than the salesperson knows what's going on in my head. If all salespeople were mind readers, they would be absolutely amazed at the thought processes of their prospects. It would eliminate all that fear because they'd be able to hear their prospects thinking, God, I really need to buy this. God, I wonder if I can get it today. I really need it today. Oh, geez, I'd love to get a discount, but I don't care. I got to have this thing right now. Boy, how would that change the conversation? Our prospects don't tell us this stuff because it weakens their negotiating position. They're not stupid. In fact, buyers today are smarter, savvier, more experienced, more skilled at negotiating than ever before. So they're more formidable.
At a time when they really need to be better. This
absolutely.
Is almost comical, Don.
It really is. You're absolutely correct. So savvy buyers.
We just had an interesting tweet. Let me share this with you.
Uh-huh.
I can't even, Ironmongery Shot. He just tweeted, whenever I see huge discounts, my first thought is, so you usually rip me off, do you?
Yep. That's exactly correct. That's what your prospect is thinking when you're offering 40% off.
Gives a whole new meaning to thinking about the behaviors that you're using to try and grab a sale.
Exactly.
What is the aftertaste that happens for your prospect?
Yeah. And that's why I encourage people.
Now, when is there a situation that you can offer a discount?
There may be legitimate reasons why it's in your best interest as the seller to discount something. It might be a closeout. You're trying to get rid of it to make space. It might be a scratch and dent. It might be a color that's very unpopular. Nobody wants this thing in green, so you're discounting the green ones 20%. It may be your slow season. If you're a landscaper and you are in a northern part of the country, well, winter is going to be a slow season for you. So you may offer discounts on your services during your slow times. Now, that is a reasonable, logical discount. It's tied to something that makes sense. When you're busy, you charge more. Same like hotels. If you're going to a hotel during a busy season, you're going to pay more than if you go during a slow season. You might offer a discount if the customer comes and picks it up rather than you deliver it. You might offer a cash discount because you have to pay credit card fees. You might offer a discount if they're willing to do something in exchange for you. So maybe they take delivery in 2 weeks rather than immediately. So you take care of other customers first who have rush needs or priority needs. You might charge less if you take something out of the deal. So there are ways to offer a discount, but it has to be justified. It always must make some kind of sense, and the prospect needs to see how it makes sense.
So when you take – you just brought something up that I want to talk about a little bit more. When you're offering something and someone they're price sensitive to what is in their budget – and you say you take something out of the deal to give that to them. How do you ensure they don't have a bad taste in their mouth? Well, I needed the whole thing.
Remember,
does that work? How does that help negotiation work?
Remember always that the final decision is the customer's. And remember this. This is what I call the first rule of economics. If you can remember this, you understand more about economics than most politicians. The first thing about economics is this. Voluntary exchange is mutually beneficial. If your prospect buys from you, it is because it is in their best interest to do so. They are coming out ahead by buying your product or service. How much they're ahead will vary. That's up to them, though, to decide. So if you're offering a package of services and they say, that's too much money, we can't pay that, you may say, I understand. Here's what we could do. We could take out this one service, and that would bring the total price down to this. Now, the prospect has a choice. They can choose the smaller package of services that's in their budget, or they can find a way to get the extra money to buy the package they really want. Either way, the choice is theirs. And whichever choice they make, they're going to be happy with because it was their choice. Is it their ideal situation? No. But really, their ideal situation would be getting the services for free.
You're so funny.
It's one of the things that some people need to understand, and business owners, professionals need to understand this too. Your prospect's perfect price is free. You will never get there. Don't try. You'll only make yourself miserable.
That's a great point. So, you know, this is also making me think of another situation. We've talked about situations where it's justified to possibly discount. You know, not just a discount to discount, but because there is a, as we said, justifiable reason. What about the flip side of that coin? How do you justify charging more when your competitors are charging less?
You need to be able to offer something that your competitors don't offer, and whatever that is needs to be of value to your prospect. A great example is Jiffy Lube. Have you ever been to Jiffy Lube, Michelle?
I have.
One of the things that Jiffy Lube does is they vacuum your car. Does vacuuming the car have anything to do with the engine?
No.
No. But it is an extra value service. When you get into your car and it's vacuumed, it's cleaned, you feel better. So that's a service that they offer that other oil change companies don't offer. And it's one of the things that enables them to charge more than their competitors. So the question is, what do you offer? What do you have? What do you do? What does your product do or have that your competitors don't? What's the reason somebody should buy you versus your competitors? If prices were all the same, who would be the best choice? It might be your experience. It might be your talent. It might be the results you've created for others. It might be additional features. It might be quality workmanship. It might be the fact that it's made in America. It could be all kinds of things. But you need to have some reason to justify your price. So what is it that you do differently? Not even better. It doesn't even have to be better. Just be different. Different is good. Different is valuable. What can you do?
Is it possible, Don, that people who do something different and it could be valuable to someone who wants it done that way, but back again like we talked earlier, because it comes naturally to you, you don't see it as being valuable? How do you help
Absolutely.
People uncover that?
Again, it's asking your customers. Ask your customers. Yes, if you don't know what it is that really makes you different, ask your customers. Ask, what's the reason you bought from us in the first place? What's the reason you stick with us? What is it about our company, our product, our service that makes you happy? What's the reason you stick with us? What's the reason you recommend us to others? Let them tell you, because often we don't know. Because you're right, we don't appreciate what we do.
Yeah, I could see where that could be one of those situations where it's almost like where the record has a scratch in it and it skips. Because I will ask people a lot of times, Don, I'll walk up to them, you know, we'll be having a conversation, and they'll go, so, you know, tell me, Michelle, what is it that you do? And I'll answer their questions, and they'll say, well, how is it that I can, you know, accomplish this? Or they'll throw some for instances at me, and I'll be able to answer their questions. But a lot of times what happens is people just hear, I'm trying to word this, I'm not doing a good job of it. They'll hear already where they're predispositioned towards. So,
right.
For example, when you get up and you give a 60-second commercial, when I give one right now, what I have uncovered is people will hear the social media part and they totally don't hear the internet marketing part. And so they'll walk
yep.
up to me and they'll go, so you do social media, huh?
Yep. And one of the challenges that most professionals have, and most businesses in general, is they do not do a decent job of explaining what makes them different, what makes them
mm-hmm.
unique. I will ask in seminars, I'll say, you know, what makes your product or service better? And people say, quality, service, performance, value. And so I'll ask them in turn, okay, well, who here says what sets you apart is your quality? Every hand goes up. Okay, who here believes that what sets you apart is your service? Every hand goes up. That's not setting you apart. If everybody makes the same claim, that claim is valueless. If I can get great quality from everybody, that's no longer a differentiator. In today's marketplace, everybody makes the same claims. Everybody talks about quality and service and performance and value. Those words mean nothing. They're not setting you apart. They're making you more the same. So what can you say that nobody else says? If you want to charge more for whatever it is you sell, you must be able to say something that nobody else can say. So what claim can you make about your product, your service, your company that you could back up so that if challenged in court, you could win that case? What can you say that nobody else can say? One of the things that sets me apart. One of the things that sets me apart is on my website and in my marketing packet, I have a list that's entitled Things Don Won't Say. And it is a guarantee that I make to my clients of the cliched words, phrases, and stories that other speakers use that I guarantee not to say on the platform. Nobody else makes that claim. What can you say?
I have to tell you, Don, when I read that, I laughed out loud because you are so on target with that.
Everybody laughs at that. That's one of people's absolute favorite pages in all my marketing because it's entertaining because it skewers all these cliches. I hate those words and those stories. I won't use them. And that's my promise to meeting planners. And that's important to meeting planners because their audiences are sick of those cliches. They don't want a speaker to come in and use those same cliched words, phrases, and stories. So that's one of the things that makes me different. What makes you different? For everybody listening, what makes you different? What makes your company different? What makes your product or service different? And do not use a cliche. Use words that nobody else is using. If you compare your website to everybody else's website in your industry, I will guarantee you're all using the same words, phrases, and sentences. And you cannot charge a premium price when you look and sound the same as everybody else.
That's a great point. And it's something that I've asked one of my industries about quite a bit. I'm like, I'll even tweet about it. Can we find another word besides value? Value should be given.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a given.
Absolutely. It is. It doesn't need to be said anymore. Same
mm-hmm.
with quality. Same with service.
And
know, those words have no. I was gonna say those words have no meaning. Those
yes,
words are actually worse than if you didn't use them because they make you sound like everybody else.
I call them invisible words.
I think they're even worse because they're words that make you more similar to your competition. They actually hurt you.
Can I cheat and tell them the first paragraph in this? You've got this great book online called The Power Words for Sales and Marketing. And
yes.
The first paragraph was just so perfect. Can I share with them the Mark Twain comment?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So Don's got this great book here called The Power of Words for Sale and Marketing, and Mark Twain famously said, "The difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and the lightning bug. The right word makes all the difference in your sales and marketing effort." And I thought, boy, that was such a perfect analogy.
And ironically, the word that not enough people use in their sales and marketing is the most important word they should be using. And actually, my last blog post was about that. If you've read it, don't tell people what it is. If you want to know the single most important word in sales and marketing, go to doncooper.com and click on the blog tab on the far right-hand side. You'll see my latest blog post, which will reveal to you the most important word in sales and marketing. It's the word you should be using more than any other by far. And again, these are simple things that people simply aren't educated on. We go to school, we don't learn this stuff. We don't learn sales and marketing in high school. We don't learn how to sell in college.
There's a lot of things we don't learn in school.
No, there are professionals.
We're down to our last 3 minutes, and I want to make a quick announcement, and then I want to end the show with asking you a new question, because you've already answered the question we ask everyone else, because you're a return guest. So I want to remind everyone, next Monday, we're going to have Jeffrey Hazlett come talk to us about his book called The Mirror Test. If you have not had a chance to hear him, you are going to love it. He's very straight to the point, straightforward, straight shooting, cowboy. He's actually seen, well, he just stepped down as the CEO of Kodak, but I was so enthralled with how he wrote this book. I mean, it's kind of like that novel where you just keep flipping the pages. So I want to invite you guys, make sure not only do you come, bring a prospect, bring a customer to next week's show and show them that you care about their business and their growing as well. So, Don, this question's not going to be quite as easy as the one about who'd you want to bring download from. I've made a couple men cry over this question, and I didn't really mean to. It came up, and it all came about because of Chris Garrett, you know, because he was the first person who came back again, and we had to come up with a new question. And it came about because of something we talked about in that interview. So I understand that you're single, but let's just say someone from your family is on stage and they are talking about the difference that your life made in the world. What would you want them to say?
Wow. I think I would like people to say that I helped change the way businesses interact with customers. I helped elevate the art of selling to make it more ethical, more professional, more personable.
That would be a wonderful legacy. I want to thank you for coming on. You have shared such a wealth of information with us today. And this is definitely one people need to be putting in their iPod and listening to over and over again, because I'm telling you, it's going to take that much time to absorb it all.
It was my pleasure, Michelle. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Don. And yes, we do definitely need to talk. I'm thinking we need to find us a corporate sponsor and bring you into town. I know a lot of people who would love to come learn from you.
Let's rock and roll.
All right. Take care. Thanks,
you
guys.
Too, Michelle.
We'll see you next week.